We have two public hearings tonight. Welcome. The first public hearing is on the proposed local law C of 2012, a local law to protect, to prevent the spread of aquatic and invasive species in Tompkins County. Is there anyone who'd like to address the legislature on that topic? Julie.
I want to address the legislature, but may I do it under legislative privilege of the floor instead?
Sure. All right, we'll close the public hearing on Local Law C and open the public hearing on the Tompkins-Cortland Community College operating budget for 2012-2013. Would anyone like to address the legislature on that matter? All right. I will close that public hearing and open the July 3rd, 2012 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Roll call of members.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk will be a few minutes late. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
I would like to ask for an executive session at the end of the night for to discuss real estate negotiations. And I will I may need to move a couple things around to accommodate members of the public who are here, in particular the TC3 items. But we'll do those as we come to them. For the public, I have Victor Tiffany.
From Danby and spokesperson for Move to Amend. Last week, the town board voted unanimously for a resolution akin to the one you passed 2 weeks ago, the more comprehensive resolution that I drew the Venn diagram for, after I explained to them that immediately after the 38th state ratifies an amendment abolishing corporate personhood, the only thing that would change immediately is that the McCain-Feingold Campaign Finance Reform Act, which is still on the books, would go back into effect. That's it. Because the rights that corrupt corporate judges have been granting corporations for the last 123 years would become privileges. What do we know about privileges? They can be regulated, they can be revoked, and they can be protected. So three examples. The Ross versus Bernhard 1970 case granted corporations the right to a jury trial in civil cases. Let's revoke that privilege. They don't need a jury trial. I'd rather have a judge deciding between plaintiff and defendant rather than my fellow citizens who don't understand complex corporate law and are much more likely to be hoodwinked by a high-priced corporate lawyer. Regulation. We're getting bombarded on television by oil and gas companies telling us how good for the environment gas drilling is and how good for the economy it will be. That's propaganda. So instead of free speech, corporate speech would be limited speech that we could regulate. Legislatures, state legislatures and Congress could regulate that kind of limited speech, so compelling them, limiting them to selling their products and services and stay out of the propaganda business. Third, protecting certain privileges. NAACP v. Button, 1962, when the Supreme Court granted the NAACP, a corporation, the right to privacy. That's a privilege that would have to be protected by Congress by amending the Civil Rights Act of 1964, or I'll be optimistic, passing the Privilege Protection Act of 2020. These three examples have nothing to do with campaign finance reform. These are old issues, but they're important issues. And I just wanted to come back this week and commend the eight of you who supported this larger resolution in your last session 2 weeks ago. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Victor. I don't have anyone else signed up. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? All right, we'll go to legislator privilege. Jim?
Thank you very much. Just a small announcement. The weekend of 19-20-21 Grassroots Festival, the biggest event in Tompkins County outside of Cornell graduation and the fireworks. So please get your tickets early and appear in Trumansburg. They will love you for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Julie, did you want to? You were.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The aquatic invasive species law that we'll have a public hearing, hope to have a public hearing on. There are several changes and questions I have about it. And I realize that I could wait until there's a public hearing and make them then, but it would be ideal to make some changes before we vote on it, and that's what I want to talk about. In the scientific community, the names of genus and species are routinely italicized. It's a simple matter. I would like to see our local law reflect that universal convention. In the definitions section under F, waters, the word inlands appears, and I have no idea what that means there. So I would propose to strike that. If we were a community that was on the ocean, I could understand that you talk about tidal waters and inland waters, but we're not. So I think it's a word that doesn't belong in here. With respect to the exceptions under Section 5, if you're going to have an exception to allow transport of plants or animals for food and landscaping, as long as they're securely contained, then I think you should allow them also to be transported for research, since that's much more germane to why we're passing this law. So I'd like to add the word research. I don't think any of these are necessarily substantive enough to require another hearing, but I think they are important. And the last thing I want to mention is that from a public policy point of view and just from general public information, it's much better practice, I believe, to list the law enforcement agencies we expect to enforce this law. So I would move to amend it to include the ones I've heard talked about, which are the Tompkins County Sheriff, the City of Ithaca Police, New York State Park Police, and DEC Conservation Officers, to include but not be limited to them. So those are the things I wanted to address, and I would like to make those changes when the time comes.
All right. Thank you.
I had one other thing I wanted to talk about under Privilege of the Floor,
sure,
which is unrelated to our direct business, and that's the total incredible disappointment of Rio Plus 20, 20 years after the first global meeting on climate change. People met again. Countries didn't even send their top-ranked diplomats and representatives. There was an almost meaningless statement that was crafted before the meeting began. It was a total waste of time. And it appears to me that although many ordinary people understand that climate change is the biggest threat facing us, there doesn't seem to be any political will in almost any country to address this. And what we're going to have is a bunch of nations just looking out for themselves. And we will go the way of other species who have destroyed their homes. It's very sad. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Carol, did you want to?
Yeah, I just want to make sure we were in the right section.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Carol, Peter, Kathy, and then Will.
My comment was in response to Julie, so I'll pass.
Oh, okay. All right, Carol.
Yeah. On the aquatic species law, I reread it, and I just want somebody to make sure that it does not rule out carrying fish, people fishing. It was not clear to me, and we don't need to do it on the floor, but whoever is responsible for it, it wasn't, you know, our fish animals, just make it clear. On more general privilege of the floor, I have two shouts out tonight, and one is to the city of Ithaca for putting on or masterminding the putting on by the community of an incredible fireworks show. It, you know, it would not have happened except that they pulled it together, and I mean, it was just a beautiful, beautiful show, so I wanted to thank them. The other is to our sheriff's department. I ended up stranded on the lake this weekend with dark coming on. We were making sure to get our boat ready and that it was shipshape to be able to go out and look at the fireworks. And we, as it was starting to get dark, we saw a beautiful sunset, and we went to come back. The boat was working fine. We had all the safety equipment. But we went to come back, and we're running, you know, and it just quit. The boat just quit. It wasn't usually when your boat won't start, you have some kind of electricity left. You can still turn on your lights, or you can still use your horn. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And the sheriff's boat came along. As we were out there getting dark, getting more scared, we had some company, and they came and without batting an eyelash said, "We'll tow you back." Did an expert job of not only towing us back, but heading us nose into a slip that, we've never had such a good docking job on our own, and this was, you know, being towed behind a boat, and they just didn't bat an eyelash, and were just well trained. And I know that we often think of boaters. This is money well spent. Is my main point. It's money well spent to not have people stranded on the lake, and we think often of boaters as the people who visit on those big boats from out of town who can afford to do that. I mean, most of the boaters out there last night at the fireworks were, you know, people I knew were people with old boats. They come out of the woodworks. And to keep the public safe, regardless of the activity, you know, it was worth the money to keep the people who need to know how to handle that equipment trained is worth the money. And it was really a disaster in the making, but it was averted. So I want to thank in particular Kevin and Jeff, you know who you are, out there patrolling the lake.
Thank you. Yeah. Peter?
I sent you all this morning an article I read in the New York Times that profoundly impressed me. And said what I've been trying to say on a couple of occasions much better, namely the need in our country for an educational system that is between high school and college, that there are a fairly good size slice of the economy which requires people with to have a greater education than you get from a traditional four-year university, and that we have nothing in this country. And I was reminded of a little story that happened to me about 30 years ago when I went on sabbatic to Germany, and I was working in a laboratory. And you know, in Germany, the word Herr Professor is a much more respected and profound title than it is here. It's really very high. During the horrors of the Third Reich, that was the last bastion to fall. And I went there, and while I'd been in the laboratory at Cornell, I had many times had interactions with technicians where I'd come up, you know, and they would make something, and I'd say, "This is what I need, and this is how I think you ought to make it," and they would go away and follow my instructions. And I had a similar experience when I was in Germany, the first time I ever talked to a technician in halting German, and I was doing something like that. And he looked at me, he stood up, and he said to me, in German, I forget the word, I want a drawing. And I said, okay, you know. And he said to me, here's how I think you should make it. And he said to me, Herr Professor, das ist meine Sache. I remember that. It means that's my thing. And he had a position in the hierarchy that was not as high as mine, but by God, it was a position and it was respected by everybody in the laboratory. I communicated with him by giving him a drawing, and he gave back the piece that was constructed to match the drawing. And I thought to myself, that's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's a wonderful thing for people in a variety of jobs to have that sense of respect and importance. And I think that's lacking in our country. And that's what I was thinking of when I read this article. And I really believe that we desperately need, in this educational system, something that fills that gap. So.
Thank you, Peter. So Kathy Lewis?
Now I'm happy to speak. The first thing for me is the notion that we had a public hearing, and the public hearing was on the proposed regulation that we had language on. Dooley's proposed some changes. That would mean to me that even if we voted tonight, what we voted on was not what people who may have wanted to come out to the public hearing tonight but didn't, because maybe they agreed with the language that was proposed, would have liked to have known before we voted. So I sort of have some problems with us voting on a public hearing that has content change, and I don't know what the legal thing is. The second thing is, Peter, I read that same article, and what it made me think of was the skilled trades and the National Joint Apprenticeship Training Programs and how you get 120 hours of college credits. It's the equivalent of 2 years of college, and how the unions provide this, that there's very little federal subsidies for this. Community colleges are very important, and many of our tradespeople go to community colleges before, during, and after. But the union apprenticeship program is a tremendous educational resource for just this sort of gap. And I think that that wasn't spoken of reminded me of the marketing job that we've got to do to explain in this country what unions do for economic development and the important ways that unions contribute to the education of people in this country. And I see Carl's nodding his head, and a lot of people who understand, because a lot of my union brothers and sisters go to community college to further themselves, to figure out how to own a business, to become a contractor, whatever. So that's what it made me think of, and I was tempted to write a letter to the editor in response, but I had to work, so thank you.
Okay. About the hearing, Jonathan, you're usually our source to determine if something is substantive or not. Have you seen Dooley's changes, or are we... and by the way, we're not voting on... The plan is not to vote on this tonight, at any rate, so...
Well, I had seen more changes than that, and some, I guess, were incorporated and some were not, and I wasn't sure which ones were and were not until I just heard. But obviously we would have to determine whether they were significant enough to merit another public hearing or not. And that would, of course, in part depend on whether they would be adopted or not. So we could certainly look at them and determine whether particular ones would be significant. Most, if not all of them, sound not significant, but they would want to look at each one.
Okay. All right. So somehow that should happen before 2 weeks from now.
Right.
I have Will and then Mike.
Thank you. I was going to speak to that a little bit as well. So Public Safety had a meeting at 5 o'clock, and we were hoping to consider either the version of the...
You mean
PDEC? Planning Committee.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Either the version of the aquatic invasives law that had been passed by Public Safety, or consider the proposed alternative that Dooley brought forth. In the course of that discussion, we realized that there were some other questions that our committee members had, and we ultimately decided not to take a vote. So we did not act prior to that. We will put the issue on the agenda for the next PDAC meeting, which is on the 11th. Unfortunately, that will not be in time for us to meet the filing deadline for a local law, which has to be 7 days before our next meeting. So we can, I suppose, at that point decide to withdraw it and go back through the hearing process if we determine that we are wanting to move in an area that would be a substantially different from what has already been approved. So, I mean, that's my understanding, and if there are questions or...
I have a question.
Okay. I've got Mike, but go ahead, Pam, if it's on this.
Okay. The question I have is that if I know that there's some urgency to getting this passed because the season is upon us and we need to have something in place. And I really think that sort of takes the precedence here. So my question is how difficult is it for us to change this once we put it in place? I mean, I in terms of this local law, we would just be going through another public hearing, but we would have something in place if we wanted to change it, so it wouldn't be like starting all over again. Is that right?
Jonathan?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, if you pass the local law as it was presented for the public hearing today, it would then go on the books upon filing with the Secretary of State, and then changes would have to be made in the same way that the local law was adopted. In other words, there'd be a public hearing, and then you could vote to make whatever amendments the legislature would want to make.
Does it become effective once we file it, once we send it to the Secretary of State?
Well, the law says upon filing with the Secretary of State, but that's only a matter of a few days. I mean, that's...
After we approve it.
Yeah, after we approve it and it's sent.
All right, I've got Mike in line, but if Carol and Peter are about this law.
Just as we finish this topic, I have something.
Okay. And I actually had two other things I wanted to talk about.
All right, let's finish this one. Anybody else on this one? Peter, Brian, and Pat.
Am I on?
Yes.
Just to complete the circle, I was going to report it when it came to a public safety report, but I'll report it now. The public safety did, in fact, look at the changes that Dooley presented and essentially did not accept any that were substantive. The only ones that we accepted were spelling errors and a grammatical error, and I don't think there was a single substantive one that we accepted. Was there, Brian?
No,
I don't think so.
Okay, Brian?
And the substantive discussion, and maybe we should have it at some point, like right now or whatever, but if they deal with the penalty, which there was some work on in a joint committee, or the enforcement, then I see no way but to go back and start over. I don't see those as tremendous hurdles, but I haven't heard. I know, Dooley, you had a question on both of them in red, and I apologize because I don't have it. I didn't bring it with me because I didn't think we were really dealing with it tonight. But there was a question on the penalty. Do you have it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I sent it to Peter to take to his committee.
Yeah, which we did.
Point of order, should we be talking about this?
Not really, and I'm going to just ask Pat, and then we'll wrap this up.
Okay.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I do share Pam's concern about timeliness, because people are using their boats on the lake. They're putting them in off the trailers and taking them back out. And I am one of the people that has some substantive concerns about the law as proposed, but even so, I would be willing, if there were any way we could do it, to put the language as it is to a vote to see if we could support getting something on the books so that law enforcement has something to work with while we work to refine it.
All right, do I understand? So PDEC has not voted anything out yet?
We voted an original version, which was slightly modified by public safety, and that is what went to public hearing today.
Okay.
And
we didn't vote on it.
We did actually vote at our last
meeting originally.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we'll take this all under advisement and do make sure everybody knows what's going on. Okay, Will, back to finish up your other items,
you,
and then back to Mike.
And I'll be very quick. I just wanted to remind folks that the comment period is open for the Thompson County Strategic Tourism Plan. It's on our website. You just go to the county plan. You look down where it says tourism grants, and that'll get you to the tourism section. And it's very readable. I think it's pretty good, but this is the time to comment, and comments will be accepted until 4 p.m. on July 9th. So do it now or hold your peace. And finally, I too wanted to compliment the city on a wonderful job of fireworks. I'm not actually a big fireworks person, but I was somehow drawn to this amazing event, which brought out thousands of our citizens in all corners. Great show, but I was mostly amazed just by the sense of community that I saw. I was looking in vain for a place to make a contribution. I know they said they were going to, and that contributions will be funding future such events. I did not encounter one when I was on Cass Park. I did go to the city's website, discovered you can donate online. They make it very easy, so you just go to City of Ithaca and click on it, and I would encourage everybody who likes such things to do so.
Thank you, Will. Mike?
Tomorrow's the 4th of July, 2012, and I hope everyone takes a few minutes to reflect on what that really means for our country. And thinking about it, was actually now the 200th anniversary of the War of 1812 that probably cemented our independence. And it's we're in the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, which started us down the road of trying to get true equality for all of our people in our democracy. The Tompkins County Civil War Sesquicentennial Commemoration Commission, longest committee that we have in the county, at least on the title line, as I mentioned last time, we'll be having an event on the 5th of July in the city cemetery to rededicate the grave markers and grave areas of two important families in Tompkins County. That will be at 6 o'clock p.m. In the city cemetery. That's the one on East Hill between University and Stewart Avenues. We're going to first go to the grave of Daniel Jackson, who we call Faithful Daniel Jackson. He came to Ithaca in the 1840s, fleeing from slavery. He made his life here working in the ESD tannery. At the end of the Civil War, Jackson returned south to bring his elderly mother to live with him and his family. They died within 5 days of each other in 1889. And at that point, ESSD erected a monument in the city cemetery that talks about Faithful Daniel Jackson, and that's one of the reasons we're able to know about him and remember him. As an African-American, he was an important part of our community. The other site which we're going to look at is the Brum, B-R-U-M, family. In 1824, Titus Brum bought land on South Cayuga Street. And in the 1820s, he and his family lived in the house throughout the 19th century. Titus was an important leader of the small African-American community here in Ithaca, forming political groups. His home was site of protest meetings against the Fugitive Slave Act. His son, Ira, served in the all-white 185th New York Volunteers in the Civil War. So I guess it wasn't all-white. Dying the day after his company was mustered out. His son Frederick is also buried here, as well as an infant son Clarence and their daughter Mary Brum Johnson, wife of George Johnson, who's buried at Lakeview Cemetery. So we're going to spend a few minutes remembering these folks and remembering the Civil War and what it meant. You're all invited. Public is invited. We'd be pleased to see all of you there.
Thank you, Mike. You must have noticed the story that came out recently about a recalculation of the number of people who died in the Civil War.
Yes, a professor in Binghamton is doing that. We've actually talked about whether he might be a candidate for one of our lectures to talk about things like that.
And that basically, by by looking more closely at the census data and other, I don't remember the details, but the equivalent number of casualties were the Civil War were held today, the equivalent number of casualties would be 7 million Americans. So if you sort of think of the scale of that, the size of our country at the time, the number of people who died, and think of what 7 million deaths would mean to us today, it's pretty sobering.
Sobering, isn't it?
Anyone else? Did I get everybody? Frank.
I don't want to steal any of Pam's thunder, so I'll make this an announcement as the chairman of the TCAT Budget Committee. You should have all received an invitation to the TCAT Partners budget presentation. It's Wednesday, July 25th at 11:30. It'll be at the Public Library, and it's important. Most of you have been through this more than once. The city has so many new Common Council members that if you have an opportunity to speak to your colleagues, please encourage them to come, because there are some nuances in the budget, the TCAT budget for 2013, and we'll be doing a highlight on a five-year budget plan at that point. And it would be important. It would be important that, particularly the city folks, do come. I know all of you are just going to vote in favor of what we're proposing anyway, right, Pam? So it's a given. Joe and David do attend, and Pam, I'm sorry if you were going to say something about this, but it didn't look like it, so I thought I'd better.
How do I look when I'm going to say something, Frank?
Puzzled. Quiet. You look quiet. I follow your lead.
I'm always quiet.
And I follow your lead a lot.
Always.
Are we done? Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. A couple of quick items on my report. I want to thank the staff that worked very hard to put together the grant for the Pine Tree Road project, John Lampman, Jeff Smith, and especially Joe Mariana. I think we all know that Joe works on Saturdays and most of Sunday, too, usually on stuff that's meaningful, but I think the manipulation of the particular electronic form that was required for this grant submittal, and then making seven copies in seven loose-leaf notebooks was a little below your pay grade, but your dedication is, you know, marvelous, and it had to get done, and you did it, and we really appreciate it, and certainly hope that it works. It's a quality piece of work, and there was a lot of discussion back and forth, and Carol weighed in, too, and it was, a very good proposal. I had the opportunity. We've talked earlier about the issue about the unemployment numbers and the Bureau of Labor, the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, calculating the numbers differently, starting in 2011, and how we've been shown as undercounting, showing more unemployment than is actually true. Martha Armstrong was able to be on a conference call that was organized by staff in Senator Schumer's office and with some people at the federal agency. They, together with somebody from the Cornell Statistics Department, they worked very hard to try to convince these, I will say, bureaucrats, maybe not in the most flattering use of that word, that this was important and urgent and needed attention quickly. They seemed to agree sort of with some of their comments and said, well, maybe we can fix that by March 2013. So Martha and I worked on a letter that I was able to give to Senator Schumer today and Senator Gillibrand. Senator Schumer was here for a meeting of a regional task force in Watkins Glen And Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand was here for a presentation about the commons and city economic development. So aside from the importance of those two events, I was able to sort of make eye contact and give both of them a letter outlining the problems, and I feel like we got some assurance that this is going to get kicked up another couple of notches, and I hope that something can be done about it. So those meetings were very interesting. The Schumer meeting was in he called together staff from the EPA, from Fish and Wildlife Service, what was the third federal agency, Nathan, that was there? Fish and Wildlife? Okay, I don't know. I can't remember. Along with representatives from five Finger Lakes counties, and really challenged us to create a regional plan for the long-term, for the eradication of hydrilla, and basically said, if you come up with a plan, I'll get the money to implement it. Roxy Johnson made a presentation. We had to leave a little early and didn't stay for the whole thing. But it was, I think, an important signal that the federal government is aware of this and ready to work on it. And calling the region together was very helpful. And something happening next week, Carol and I are headed to Albany based on a meeting that Carol had with NYSAC, with Steve Aquario, back in the early spring about the taxation issues related to gas drilling. Steve Aquario has pulled together a meeting with Robert Megna, who is the governor's chief budget officer. And so the two of us plus a couple of NYSAC staff and Steve will be meeting with him next week to talk about first the narrow issue of how the state needs to structure taxation. We'll probably broaden the discussion.
We've broadened the agenda
a little bit.
They don't know it yet.
They don't know it yet. But basically to talk about the cost of gas drilling and really to present that at the highest level to the administration. So I thank Carol for reaching out to NYSAC, you know, months ago and preparing that report with your committee that really has gotten a lot of attention. And so we'll be taking that another step next week. Any questions? All right, Joe Mariana, County Administrator.
Thanks, Martha. Quick report again tonight. A reminder, again, that July 16th is our retreat. We talked about the topic of that, which is going to be the climate survey, the employee climate survey that was undertaken, and what should we do as next steps to follow up on that. So that's the 16th of July at 5:30 at the Health Department. Hoping to see you there. I want to follow up on workplace flexibility. We often talk about these studies that we do and task forces that we assemble and so forth, and it may feel like sometimes the product of that ends up in the ether somewhere. So I wanted to follow up on workplace flexibility, which was an internal task force that was undertaken over the course of a year, chaired by Ed Marks and Anita. And the recommendation that came out of it was, it looks like there are opportunities for the county to be more flexible in the way we staff our functions, including in some cases, appropriate cases, working from home, working in satellite offices, more flex time and so forth. But we want to take this slowly because this is brand new for us and it's fairly new to government generally. So the notion was to have DSS do a very controlled pilot program for 6 months, see how it worked, kind of set some ground rules, work with the unions to make sure that there was a cooperative understanding here, create a controlled environment within homes to the point of really specifying what the work station needs to look like at home, and then putting some rules in place and seeing how it goes. I wanted to let you know that we are underway with that pilot, that there are currently 10 DSS employees who are working a minimum of 1 day a week from their homes, no more than three, most often just 1 day a week. And it is distributed fairly evenly within programs in DSS. But, again, the pilot is underway. We're going to watch it very carefully. At the end of 6 months, there will be an evaluation. I think Dina Bodner, who all of you know, will be involved in that. So we will be able to take lessons from it, I think, and apply it throughout the county government. So it's a very interesting first step. Completely different topic, highway. First of all, thank you, Martha, for Pine Tree. We should also acknowledge that the town of Ithaca really stepped up and got some things done to help us get the application in place, including a resolution that was passed there. Herb Engman and the board were very helpful, as was Cornell, in getting some documentation that we needed from Cornell. So we know that it's still an issue with a lot of opinions behind it, but in terms of getting paperwork in and getting the grant to the state, it really was a great cooperative effort, and we appreciate the help of a lot of people in getting that done. The last item on highway, I think as we were leaving last time, we talked about Hanshaw Road and the fact that funds had been recovered. We were a little cautious about going too far in that because the numbers that we were looking at, we wanted to make sure that they checked out. I can tell you that now that the state and federal money has been restored, that the amounts have been adjusted to account for inflation that's occurred. So we are basically at full funding again with state and federal aid on Hanshaw. A letter was sent by Highway Director Jeff Smith to neighbors to let them know of this update, and it's our expectation and plan to get work underway beginning in early 2013. So again, in terms of our communication with neighbors, which we've said we want to upgrade, it was a regular mail letter that went to residents of that neighborhood. So that progress or that project is very much back on track. And that's my report. Thank you.
That's a miracle.
Well, you know, and I'm glad you said it's a miracle because it's a miracle, but it's also we had some very helpful advocates within New York State, and we're quick. I am at least sometimes to say the state isn't doing what it can to help us. We had a fellow named Joe Flint in the Syracuse Regional Office of DOT who scrounged around, worked hard, asked to be left alone. We trusted him and left him alone. Sometimes that doesn't work. And he, with his colleagues in that office, found the money and made it available to us, and that really important project here is back on track, largely because of their efforts, so we should note that.
It's going to be renamed Flint Drive, right?
Flint Drive.
Okay.
Flint Drive for Joe Flint.
And it was the Army Corps of Engineers was the third federal agency that was there at the hydrilla meeting. So, any questions for Joe? Thank you, Joe. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
I guess because Joe was praising the state, I'm going to bash him. This is just a follow-up to a report I gave to the GO committee last week. I reported that at the last minute there was introduced in the state Senate and Assembly a bill called the Uniform Notice of Claim Act. And the act originally did two things. It would allow counties and other municipalities to file notice of claims against them by filing them with the Secretary of State. And also would allow good faith errors to be excused in not filing. The law changed and they eliminated the good faith errors part, but they still would allow filing with the Secretary of State. This was introduced like the week before and without any notice to any affected municipality. And it's very hard to imagine any possible good that would come from that other than it would delay the filing or the investigation of claims, because instead of filing with the county, you'd file with somebody in Albany. It wouldn't get, at very best, it would get to the county much later, therefore thereby defeating the whole purpose. So I reported on this at GEO, that this just came up at the last minute. The GEO committee unanimously authorized me to write a letter to the our representatives saying that we oppose this, as many other counties were going to do. That very day, it passed both the Senate and the Assembly. That's pretty remarkable that they can act so quickly on things which people know nothing about, or without any notice to any affected parties. I did send the letter to the governor, and I copied our representatives. Interestingly, two of our representatives, Seward and O'Mara, voted against it. The other two voted for it. But it's interesting how something could happen that quickly without any consultation to the affected parties, and without any, it's really hard to find any rational reason. And there's no bill as jacket or anything as far as I can tell. And the reason given and the purpose is if to promote uniformity in the filing of notice of claims. And I can't imagine how allowing to file with the Secretary of State could possibly promote uniformity. In fact, it would seem to do the opposite. By now, you could file in more different places. So the logic escapes me. But it's interesting, and hopefully the governor will veto it. On one other issue, to follow up on my last report on Coddington Road, Hanshaw. I had said last time that we were in the process of filing the petition on eminent domain for the remaining properties. We've since filed the petition. The final result at this point is that there are 8 property owners with whom we don't have agreements and 90 that we do. So that's my report.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Peter?
Jonathan, will we have to vote again on something to do with that eminent domain thing?
I sure hope not.
I mean, there's no more steps in the process. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right, anything else? David Squires, Finance Director.
In your red folder, you'll see resolution was passed earlier in the evening by government operations authorizing the conveyance of properties that were sold at auction. I was very pleased with the auction, but it was an interesting experience because we had more bidders there this year than in past years, but they weren't bidding in significant numbers. I mean, it was pulling teeth to get a bid out of and actually the most desirable parcels were the first ones to come up, these subdivision lots in the Ellis Hollow area. And people wouldn't offer $10 for the property. So the auctioneers really had to work to get money out of the participants. And what was also surprising, at the end of the auction, I talked to 2 successful bidders who acknowledged that they didn't even visit the properties. And they put at risk, a significant amount of money to bid on properties they didn't really do any research on, but they thought, looking at a brochure, that it might be a good deal. So it makes me wonder whether they'll actually close. But if you look at the sheet, we estimated we would probably realize about $200,000 on the high end. The auctioneer thought maybe $175,000. And it started off like we were going to end up with $100,000. And then something happened, and there was a lot of competition and several parcels. But the people who bid have till July 10th. And the minimum, you had to pay up to $4,000, a minimum of $4,000 to hold the property. So we'll know after next week whether people follow through. And the practice is if they don't, the second bidder will be offered the property if the first bidder walks away. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't look at the property and then discovered. I mean, one person came and said there was garbage in the property. I mean, well, the property had been wide open for 2 years, so it wasn't surprising there was garbage inside. So that's it. Another issue is I put on your desk a copy of the official statement cover of our next financing. And the reason why I want to bring this to your attention because we're expecting a historic low interest rate on our bond sale. We haven't really, we should end up with under 3% coupon rate on this bond issue, which would be a low based upon what we're doing. That's kind of exciting. When I started here in 1992, the first bond issue we had rates of 5.5%. And then they started moderating, and they've been in the neighborhood of 4.5%, and now the environment is 3 and under. And finally, I just want to advise the chair of the legislature that I've been thinking about becoming a lame duck here, that I tend to more or less fade away at the end of next 2013. And having observed the exhaustive nature of the process of replacing a department head, I thought that you probably wanted a lot of time. So I would urge the legislature to start looking at that, start discussing what you think might be appropriate qualifications for my department. Times have changed, the last recruitments that you've had have taken on average 9 months and some longer. And I will be here, I hope that you will find a replacement before the end of your legislative term. But I realize that it takes a long time, and frankly, I think that you want to analyze this carefully about what qualifications you want and so forth, because it's been 20 years since I joined the organization.
Yes, David, I read your letter with it wasn't an email, it was a letter, and it just sort of set you back a little bit, and to think of 20 years and how things have changed and how you've shaped this county and guided this county. We are in better shape than, I don't know, anybody else around, and many, many thanks to you. And it is a further act of commitment and generosity that you are willing to stay around long enough to overlap with the next finance director so that there can be a transfer, a brain dump, so that people, so that we really are, we will be set on a good course for the future, thanks to your commitment of time in that direction. So we do, we will need the time to do that, and GEO has a lot on its plate. I mean, we'll talk about, I've talked to Joe and Dooley about what kind of search committee, and we'll do that shortly. But it is, shouldn't be a surprise, but it's still kind of a shock to hear you say this. And we thank you for everything. Thank you for everything that you've meant to this county.
One last thing I forgot to mention about this bond. We'll be undergoing a ratings review next week. And as we had the last budget meeting, after the conclusion, we had an audit committee meeting. And we were very pleased with the outcome of the 2011 financial report. And it's going to serve us well in our ratings review. So very pleased about that, because we've been playing defense for the last issues, and we can play offense now.
Pam?
I would have a more mundane question for David. I wanted to ask you about the people who were successful in their bids for the properties, were required to put a down payment or whatever it is.
Yes.
Is that money, will they, if they decide not to buy it, do they get that money back? Or
no.
Okay.
No, it's and it's explained to them that it's a legal document, just like a real estate closing, and we try to stress that they have a responsibility to, I don't encourage anybody to bid it, because it's kind of a risky process when you buy a property at a tax foreclosure auction, because there's no guarantees and there's so many unknown factors. So it takes a brave soul to participate.
Carol?
Yeah, I just want to say I really appreciate all you've done for us, and there's a long time between now and when you're going to go, so we'll have time for goodbyes, but I appreciate your service. I also have a more mundane question. refresh my memory about whether we set minimum bids
no.
for those properties. Should we consider doing that in the future?
A good auctioneer will say that doesn't serve anybody's purpose.
Frank?
David, did you want to tell the legislature now, or would you like me to fill in the blank about... David's made a commitment that all capital projects and bonds that were started and initiated under his watch will be paid prior to December of 2013, and those that aren't, he'll bring in at under a 1% rate.
He's got a universal right? service fund, right?
Very good.
That was good.
Brian.
Thanks for that, Dave, and I'm happy for you that you're going to be reaching into retirement, but thanks for all your service. Are you still going to come and play in the golf tournament?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I think you have a permanent spot. Dooley?
At the auction, was the town of Dryden present?
No.
I don't want you to go.
I'm sorry.
I don't think GO can take this on.
Well, there will be a search committee. I mean, you know, it's not within the GO. Regular agenda. Jim?
Nothing. I will save my compliments for David Squires. At the time, he darkens the shadow of the door.
For the roast, Jim?
Yeah.
Right. So you have a year and a half to work on it.
Exactly.
All right. Good. All right. Let's see. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Will?
I would like to add authorization. Let's see. Resolution N, authorization to continue the home ownership program through the use of program funds and to contract with Better Housing for Tompkins County.
Thank you. Is there a second? Second by Frank. You need 10 votes to add. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed?
Do I abstain from this?
No, you're not.
Better Housing?
Better Housing.
Okay.
That's unanimous. Thank you. Dooley?
I'd like to add resolution that went through GO earlier today, authorization to execute quitclaim deeds, sale of foreclosure properties at public auction that David just described.
Okay. Is there a second? Second by Mike. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous as well. All right, I'll go through the consent agenda. If there's something that needs to come off, please let us all know. Resolution A, budget adjustment, county clerk. Resolution B, acceptance of grant from Community Health Foundation of Western and Central New York for assistance with learning session expenditures. Resolution C, authorizing a public...
If there are changes in the language in the charter, does this have to come off consent?
Jonathan, this is authorizing the public hearing. Should we take this resolution off consent? Or if the law...
Well, let's take
no.
it off.
And you don't have to take off a resolution authorizing the public hearing.
Well, Dooley's asked to have it come off, so that's fine. Okay, and there are two appointments. Find them. Sorry, folks. Bless you. Peggy Ficken to the Environmental Management Council from the town of Groton, and Scott Miller to the Environmental Management Council and at-large seat. Is there a motion on the... consent agenda. Pat moves it. Less than seconds. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Those are unanimous. Thank you very much. I would like to, let's see, the budget. Pat, if you wouldn't mind to accommodate Carl Haynes, if we start with budget and go to Jim Dennis for TC3 business.
Thank you. I'm going to move Resolution D and endorse. I'm sorry, revised endorsing TC3 campus master plan approving expansion and renovation of Tompkins-Cortland Community College facilities subject to a state approval and funding it, and I would move that.
Seconded by Brian. Discussion. Any questions for Carl? All right, ready to vote. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that's unanimous. All right, thank you.
Resolution E, adoption of the 2012-2013 operating budget, Tompkins-Cortland Community College, and I would move that.
Seconded by Pat. Any discussion?
Is that with my changes?
No, it is not.
There's in the original packet, is the Resolution E. Dooley.
This is Resolution E. Since we had a public hearing, it seems good form to me to say that we heard all persons wishing to speak on the topic. We didn't hear anybody, but that's part of what we should be saying, I think. So that was one change. And the other was in a resolved where it was I was given to understand that this amount is approximately 1% more than it was last year, and that seems like the kind of information that should be in the resolution. So I'd move those two changes.
So that's a motion to amend the original motion, seconded by Pam.
I believe those were shared with County Administrator and President Haynes.
And they're in your packet. Jim?
I have a question for Joe and Carl that I saw. I was privy to emails today, and other people were, on some of these things going back and forth about this, I believe, about this item. And Carl seemed to agree that there was a form that he was comfortable with, and I think Joe was also. Am I on the right page here? Or was that having to do with...
I think most of it had to do with the master plan.
Okay,
and
sorry
language
about
and
that.
The resolution that you've just...
Do you know, Carl, are you aware of what's going on here with the changes?
I understood that you just approved the master plan.
Yeah, the master plan. We're on
right.
The other.
Okay. Then I'm not familiar with what the changes are. I really could not hear...
Mike, do you have a copy of it you can hand him? Do you have... It's in your red folder. If you could just show him the Dooley suggestions...
If they're not very substantive, then I'm sure it'd be fine.
The only substantive one is, I think, is that it identifies that the budget is 1% more than last year.
Approximately.
Sponsor share is 1%.
Right.
I don't know why. What is the actual change, the word approximate?
The 1% information was not in there at all. And...
Yeah.
I was told that that's what was shared at the budget meetings that I wasn't able to attend, and I thought that copies of this were sent to you, and I'm sorry if that didn't happen.
Yeah, no, I did not see that. The only cautionary note I have is that Cortland's already approved the parallel resolution that you're looking at, and what that approval represents is the budget document that does represent that 1%. So. I'm just a little uncertain about whether that has any significance or not, to be honest.
Does it create a problem then if we have a different, some slight difference in wording with Cortland?
Maybe the attorney would have a comment on that. I don't know. I'm just, you know, because the language in each resolution talks about a concurrent resolution from
right.
The other county. So, and Cortland did approve this last week.
Jonathan, then Jim, Frank, and Brian.
Well, I mean, assuming it's accurate, it doesn't really seem substantive. It's just descriptive. On the other hand, I don't, hard to say it's very helpful either, but I don't think it creates any issue.
Okay. Jim, Frank, Brian.
I have two concerns. One, I rarely say these things out loud that I'm any importance at all here, but I am the chair of the committee and I have not seen this and I don't have a copy of it. Okay? And what things that are becoming, are coming into this committee in the last 24 hours, I think are inappropriate. And I'm going to, as we move through the budget process, decide with all of you how we're going to accept changes that are made to at least items that come through this committee. Because, you know, people don't know about them. They're last minute. It makes extra work for the staff. And they have to print, you know, thousands or hundreds of pieces of paper. And, you know, we need to know this 72 hours before, or at least before the agenda comes out, because it's a continuing process that's frankly annoying.
All right, let me just clarify. Let me make sure I get everybody. I got Frank is next, Brian, Kathy, and then Peter. I had proposed changes submitted by Legislator Kiefer, Resolution E, in my red folder. Did others not get that? Not to dispute any of the rest of what you said, Jim.
I have a resolution E that's on a yellow sheet of paper. It doesn't say anything about it being changed by anyone.
Check inside your folder. I believe staff spent time doing all these this afternoon, so you should have that. Frank?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't think that that creates a big problem, but if people feel comfortable, we could add that as a note, as we often do, at the end of the below the actual wording. If, Carl, if you're concerned that it's inconsistent with the Cortland County resolution, frankly, I think it's helpful to know that the budget may be approximately X percent different.
First of all, it's not approximate, it is 1%.
Oh.
Secondly, the last result does talk about a concurrent resolution, which this would not be.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe your minutes or something, but I think the substance of the matter, which is the fact that you are committing to 1% additional in sponsor rate, is reflected in the budget that this is referencing.
But if we, as I mentioned, we often add notes of explanation at the bottom of resolutions.
Oh.
And if this presents a problem in the body of the resolution, we could add it as a note at the bottom of the resolution.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that process, but that sounds like that might work.
Okay.
The way I have, where I saw your hands, I got Brian, Kathy, Peter, Pat, Dooley, and then I'll put myself in.
I'm happy to withdraw my motion if that will solve everything.
It will.
Okay.
I think Frank's suggestion is excellent. And may I say something to Jim?
Sure.
I was under the impression that you had been emailed this, and I apologize if you didn't get it.
Okay. So the changes are withdrawn, and we would like to add a note that says the local sponsor shares are 1% more than the 2011-2012 amount.
Yeah.
Correct?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, and Carl, the reasoning here is when we pass our own budget resolutions, we tend to outline for the public that kind of thing. It's this much of an increase over last year, and you know, so it's just sort of our habit, and maybe mm-hmm. that could be included in the future.
Okay.
Okay, so we're back to the original resolution with a note added. I could go down the list of all the people we had. Let me see if your question was taken care of by the withdrawal. Brian?
Yeah.
Okay, Kathy?
Yeah.
Thank you. I was taken aback when I saw the packet of revisions, and as you all know, this has been a concern of mine in speaking to the original motion. I like it. The fact that it's consistent with what was passed is fine with me. I do want to say that changing things during the day creates transparency problems, and I believe it's something that we need to watch for, because it tends to run rampant if we don't take a stand. However, I want to point out that something Pam said today with regard to a resolution that was edited for us is that sometimes these edits are helpful, and I don't necessarily want to dismiss every edit out of hand, but I think there's circumstances under which it's just causes a problem to the public, so I'm happy to support the original motion as passed by budget, the original resolution.
Thank you. Peter?
I have two things to say. One is has already been talked about, but I'll add my 2 cents in. I too am concerned about the number of changes that come up on meeting day, and I just don't have enough time to sit and put them all into perspective. I'm perhaps slower than many of you, but I really do like to have them in advance so I could look at them and make a decision. I think it's a bad way to operate, and I somehow think that we ought to have another cutoff day that's earlier than the legislature, when that's the last time that we present these items which are going to amend things. And on another subject, after a meeting that I went to at TC3, I looked at some numbers and I was surprised. I'm not going to go through them here, but the conclusion that I came to is that we really should be increasing our contribution to TC3 at a faster rate than we're doing at the moment. And there's a number of arguments that I could make that I'm not going to repeat here. But one argument that to me was significant is that if you look over the past decade and ask yourself how much have the students increased their giving, their payments by, it's roughly 4% per annum. And how much have we increased our payments by? Now I forget because I wasn't prepared to say this, but I think it was 2%. That may be wrong, but that's what I remember it being over the past 10 years. Carl, can you help me?
I think 2.5, but I'll check real quick.
Then it's 2. Okay, it was either 1 or 2, so it was 2. And somehow I think that's wrong. And I think that we ought to strive to keep the increases that are made by the county or the sponsors equal to the increases that are made by the students. And it was too late to try to put that into it, but I will be thinking about that at the appropriate time next year and try to raise that point again.
Pat?
I just wanted to point out that we have another option if we want the record to reflect something, and that's that we can make a statement and ask that it be reflected in the record. So we could have said something to the effect of these parts that Julie proposed we add and just ask that it be reflected in the minutes of the meeting.
True. Very good. Julie? I had you down. Maybe that was before you withdrew.
It was before I said let me withdraw it and end this.
Okay. So.
It didn't.
Okay, you're good? Jim, Brian, and Carol.
Something I did not say at the beginning because we got off in this other path. I want to commend the ability and the level of work that TC3 does, the administration, to get this budget where it is, understanding clearly what's going on in New York State government, what's going on with community colleges all over New York State for funding. These people do a magnificent job in operating a facility and trying to do the very best they can to make a maximum effort on the use of the money that we give them, Cortland County and New York State. I don't think we're getting a better deal from anyone else. This place has run well, and I'm really happy every year when we can pass it. One comment toward Peter's comment. No one disagrees that counties probably should give more money to community colleges. But what one problem we have is we're in a partnership with another county. And so we both have to get together, decide how much can they afford, how much can we afford. And that particular process has worked well for many years. And until some other process is in place that is governed by New York State, that's the way we have to operate as we move forward. And we've done that well, and I'm hoping we can continue to do it that way. So I would hope everyone can support this resolution, and I know you all support the work of TC3.
Thank you, Jim. Brian?
I just want to note that there's also another avenue that you can take. And just looking at how we started on this topic, a lot of this could be handled just in the simple press release that goes out with the resolution. I want to share my frustration also in you know what we come into at a meeting, and I would fully support some sort of cutoff date so that we can be properly prepared for revisions or items that aren't on the agenda. We've just spent 15 minutes now kind of going back and forth, and quite frankly, it's embarrassing for me to have the president of TC3 standing there while we do something like this.
Okay, great. Thank you, Brian. Carol?
Yeah, I want to speak to both the smaller issue of the changes and then the larger issue of the resolution itself and the great job that Carl has done. But I guess I'll do the bad news first. I will point out that I really appreciate that somebody goes through our resolutions with such a fine-tooth comb. And I think that I hope that Dooley doesn't stop. If she ever did, I think we will have to hire somebody at a much higher pay grade to do that, because a lot of stuff gets caught that needs to be in here. I share the sentiment that it would be better if a lot of them came to us in time for us to look them over and have more time with them. I try to save the Tuesday afternoons of our meetings to look at these things, but I can't always do that. I couldn't do it today, and I didn't today get to look at anything that came out today or in advance of the meeting. That's what I'll say about that. I will also point out that there's no such thing as a total cutoff. I mean, we can change resolutions until we vote on them. We come to the floor, and it's part of our job to look at possible changes. It's the tolerance for the number and type of changes that I think are tripping us up. So on the substance of the resolution, Jim really stole my what I was going to say. I said it better than I would say it. So just thank you, Carl, for putting together the budget that you do and for putting together the program that you do in the climate that we have today. It is very scary that there's not enough money for education in an era where we really need an educated population. So I will support the resolution.
All right. Thank you. Anyone else? All right. We're back to we are on resolution E, the original resolution with a note to reflect the 1% at the bottom, and Brian's suggestion of the press release is probably the only one the public's going to see anyway. So that's a great idea. Ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution E, please raise your hand. That looks unanimous. Jim, would you take us, skip F and go to G, which is the third Tompkins Portland Community item.
Item G, approval of the appropriation of surplus funds, Tompkins Cortland Community College, and I would move that.
Seconded by Dave. Discussion. Ready to vote?
Yes.
This is a short form roll call, please.
So.
Yes.
Yes.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? Thank you. That's unanimous. All set with TC3? Is that it, Jim?
We are. I believe.
No, we have G also.
We just did G, Peter. We're doing F and H, right? Is that the way you want to go now?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, but just before Carl.
Okay, great. Well, I just want to say thank you for all your support, A, and B, for the very kind remarks that several of you made, and we'll continue to do our best to serve our community. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right. Take care. Have a good fourth, Carl. Thank you.
Sure, Jim.
Here we go. Adjustments to the 2012 budget, City of Ithaca Municipal Sales Tax Agreement. I would move this. And
second by Kathy.
And David Squires is here to answer any questions about this.
Dooley and then Brian.
I don't know the budget line numbers, what they mean, so I'm wondering what the county city program 6901.54666 is.
David.
That is the budgeting unit in which the sales tax agreement funds are placed.
It includes all the details there, too, then.
Yeah,
it's all in one number. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Brian.
I was going to suggest that since Dave's announced he's leaving, if he could review the whole sales tax distribution formula for us again. We got lots of time.
We'll schedule a special retreat for that. Yeah. Jim, was your hand up? Was your hand?
No.
Was
but,
okay. Leslie?
So I'm looking at this too, Dave, and I recall that there's several agencies as part of the sales tax agreement. I see them all lumped in as the HSC agencies. I wonder if at some point I can just get a printout of what those agencies are and what was what they received.
Sure.
That would be very helpful for me. Thank you.
David, I have a question. Since the third whereas says that the actual collections increased by 4.2%, why is it
a negative?
Yeah.
Well, in the budget there was an over-allocation for the city's portion of the agreement. It's essentially about $1.2 million that's affected by the agreement. And every year there's a reconciliation based upon the prior year's activity within the city. And so there was an increase in the sales tax, so there was an adjustment upward for certain portions of the agreement. But not all the allocations for the sales tax agreement inflate, only the agencies and the city. But the city happened to be miscalculated for their share for 2000 after making that adjustment. So in a way, we were fortunate that misallocation resulted in being able to fund that increase without having to do anything extraordinary. But it's the most convoluted piece, one of the most convoluted pieces in the entire budget, and it's been that way since 1994.
And Nancy Burson is the other local expert on it. If you want another source of information, Pam.
So, Dave, I think that this shows that, in fact, we aren't going to be able to replace you because I don't expect that anybody else is going to understand this to the degree that you can.
Well, Kevin Sutherland understands it more than I do because I made it that way because it's mind-boggling.
Although you notice he didn't show up tonight.
Yeah, right. I've yet to see that.
All right. We're ready to vote. Thank you very much, David. All in favor of Resolution F, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Jim, does that take care
of... No, it does not.
Okay.
I have a budget adjustment, Resolution H.
Right. Okay.
Appropriation of unspent funds under Budget Capital Personnel Committee from 2011 to various accounts. Legislator Kiefer had suggested a change in the number line 8. And, well, it's not line 8. It's in the second whereas, used by departments that report to Budget Capital Personnel Committee, and that's fine with me.
And the title changed, too?
Okay.
That's in your packet?
Yeah, and the title changed. I would move the changes.
Okay. Is there a second for that?
Resolution with the changes.
Leslie seconds. Resolution with the changes. Discussion? All in favor of, is this a roll call, Kathy? This is a short roll call.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes. Anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous.
That would be the end of resolutions. We have a meeting on the 23rd, I believe, and when I put the motion on the floor about the city sales tax and gave that mini laugh, that's why David Squires is a valuable employee, that he can explain sales tax agreements with anyone. So I really appreciate that that knowledge, and clearly the county does. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim. To accommodate a couple of people here, Pat, I hope you'll have some forbearance. Peter Stein has asked to be able to give his report and then leave early for family matters. Peter?
Okay. Let's see. It sounds hard to believe, but I think we had our public safety meeting yesterday. Is that right? Yes. It seems like a long time ago. It was full of action. The first item that I have to report is that the Department of Corrections has approved once again our jail variance, which is an important accomplishment. And number two, we had a report from the district attorney, from Gwen, about the enforcement of Leandra's law. To those of you who don't remember what that is exactly, that if you are convicted of either a felony or a violation, DWI, part of your sentence will contain that you are required to put a device in your automobile that will, the device will not allow the car to start if you have more than a certain amount of blood, of alcohol in your blood. And how do they do that magic? Well, there's a tube there, and you blow into the tube, and it, if in fact your blood alcohol is higher than the threshold level, the car won't start. People when I first heard of this, people sneered at it and said, well, there's no problem, you get a friend to go in and blow in for you, and then you can start the car and everything's hunky-dory. That turns out not to be true. It turns out that the interlocking system is more complex than that. And if you're, I think if you're smart enough to figure out how it is you're going to get around it, you're probably not inebriated at the time. Now, it's, the enforcement is that if the judge at your conviction tells you that you have to, you may ask the judge to actually to exempt you from that. And there are a number of reasons which I don't understand, but the most important one is that you say, well, okay, but I'm going to get rid of the car. I can't pay the money to do that, so I'm just going to get rid of my car. And then you may or may not get rid of your car. Now, what I went to a NYSAC conference 6 months ago or a year ago or something like that, and heard a report in public safety that said that throughout New York State, practically nobody was having those devices put in. And I was appalled, and when I came back here, I asked Gwen to look into that. It wasn't immediately apparent. It turns out it's like most public safety data, it's hard to get any answer to a question, and it took quite a lot of time. And finally she reported what the result was. So the result in Tompkins County is that approximately half of the people who are convicted of DWI end up with interlocks in their car. Now, you might say, only half? Why not all? But let me tell you that that number is considerably greater than the average for New York State. In New York State, it's less than a third, I believe, of the people that are convicted that actually end up with this in your car. And it turns out that what's in that other half, well, primarily it's defendants who say, well, I'm not going to have a car to drive. In other parts of New York State, I was told at that meeting, at the NYSAC meeting, that judges are saying, What kind of business is that, the government getting in your way and making you put a device in your car? And they just weren't doing that. That does not happen, I'm told, in Tompkins County. There are various ways, as I say, of getting around that, and it's hard to figure out all of the ways. But, in fact, both the probation department and the district attorney's department assure us that they're being assiduous and that they're trying to look into all of these cases to make sure that, in fact, the people that do not have devices installed in their automobile are not driving. It's not easy to enforce, but they take it very seriously, and they're doing so. So I think it would be better if the number was higher than a half, but that number, a half, is a pretty high number. A third thing I want to report on is an effort that has been going on now for some time. We have been working with the sheriff to try to figure out a system whereby we in the county can provide some level of police protection to villages and towns inside the county at a cost that is very significantly lower than the cost that those municipalities would have to pay in order to do that themselves. I have some personal experience with that. When I was on the town board of the town of Ithaca, we tried hard to negotiate such an agreement with the sheriff at that time. Members of the town board felt that we ought to have some police presence in the town and more police presence in the town than we get for our fraction of what the sheriff road patrol does. And it just turned out there was too much red tape. We just couldn't do it, and we finally gave up and stopped looking into it. Well, it turns out there are counties that have done this very successfully. I know of two counties. One is Yates and one is Chautauqua, where both have active programs at this time. And Brian and I went and talked to the sheriff in Chautauqua County, spent a long time with him, and both of us were convinced that this was possible. It's not easy, and I don't want to go into the details particularly, but the idea is that we will get extra police force, policemen, to carry out duties that the municipalities will pay us for. And that's called contracting out public safety. There'll have to be an agreement with the road patrol union to allow us to do this, because part of it has to do with part-time people, and part-time people are not allowed by the current union agreement. But we have reason to believe that the deputies agree that this is a good idea. It's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a win-win situation. It's a win for the county because they have extra police on doing things within the county, and that can't be bad. And it's a win for the towns that have this need and can't afford to do it. And the last thing I want to report is that at our meeting next month, which will be the day after the first, will be the Wednesday after the first Tuesday meeting, we will have a presentation at the Public Safety Committee of the report of the consultant who we have tasked to give us a report on how we're doing with the 911 system and what is it that we can do to make it better. I can say no more except that the consultant will in fact report at that time, and that will be an open meeting, and I invite you all to come. I think it will be an interesting presentation. So that's my report.
Thank you very much, Peter. Frank, and then Jim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Peter, I have a need for clarification on the description you just gave regarding extra patrols or extra help in certain municipalities. First, answer a question for me. Did it include adding more personnel?
Absolutely.
It did?
Yes.
The concern I have is that if a municipality is wealthy and can afford to hire, if you will, quote-unquote, additional personnel, it seems it's a detriment, it could be a detriment and a little bit unfair to those municipalities that cannot afford it. I was on the same committee that you were on that Don Barber chaired a number of years ago with Barbara Blanchard and Sheriff Meskel when we looked into that, and it sort of languished for a lot of different reasons. But it might be worth resurrecting that group or a group like it to look at that again. There was a discussion about consolidated police forces at that point, and it might be worthwhile giving that another look.
Well, I certainly couldn't object to doing that, yes. I'll look that up and see what the message was. But let me just...
You were there as a town board member.
Yes, I remember that. I don't remember the... I don't think I have a copy of the final report. I'm not sure there was one.
There
I thought it just sort of dissolved,
report,
right.
No.
So, but with regard to disadvantaging other towns, I don't quite see why. The point... I mean, it's a contract service. Let's pick a wealthier town. Town of Ithaca, I think, is probably the wealthiest of the towns. Town of Ithaca decides that it wants to have a patrol, a speeding patrol on Pine Tree Road, for instance. That's what they decide. Let me just hypothesize that. And they want it, I don't know, they want it every day from 12 to 7, 8 or something like that. The general idea is that in something like that, the sheriff's office, which is equipped to do this, the town is not equipped to do this, hires a part-time person, and the part-time person, who is already a sworn deputy, the town gets him, the sheriff gets him a uniform, gets him a car, and he goes out there and does his thing, and the town of Ithaca pays the sheriff for the incremental cost that it took to do that. So you might say, well, why don't they do it themselves? And the reason they don't do it themselves is that you need some kind of supervision, you need a place for them to go, you need to have a uniform and so forth, and all of that is supplied by the sheriff, and the sheriff charges the town the incremental cost for doing that. So it doesn't come out of the sheriff's budget.
It's additive. It doesn't change what we might appropriate.
But, Madam Chair, I think it's worth looking at, but there's a lot of unanswered questions with a proposal like that. We did look at that. This is a number of years ago, and one of the concerns was the one I raised, that if a community and a municipality can afford that, there's certain items, if I remember it right, and there are certain items that the sheriff becomes responsible for interceding and providing, and it was considered an unfair burden, if you will, on the municipalities that can't afford that. There are questions like a deputized individual, if there was an emergency, would that person be available outside of that municipality to help out? These are all, I don't want to get into it tonight, Peter. But
why don't we talk about it in private, okay? I'd be interested in what you have to say, because I don't remember it that well.
Yeah,
Thank you.
This is a initial sort of update for everybody, so this is not a report of a proposal. This is the beginning of a discussion. Jim?
I have two comments. One question, one comment. Even though, Martha, what you just said was this is a discussion, this is not a proposal. I frankly, all due respect, this is really not ready for prime time, and now it's in prime time. And now someone is going to have to explain some of the things that were said here to not only our road patrol, but other people. And it's unfortunate at this particular time. I'm sorry, Peter. I understand what you're talking about. I understand what the goal you want to reach, but we're really not ready at this point to even have a public discussion of such an item from my point of view. And I will stop there. I do have a question for you. You said that we signed an agreement or we have an agreement with the, and I can't think of the word, the beds in the jail.
The board out?
The board
variance.
The variances.
The variances.
Are there any changes in that?
No. It's the same variance that we've always had.
But it's six. It's a year rather than 6 months. And if you remember, we had a few months ago, we had a pretty big scare about a sudden, huge, really big spike in population and many board outs, and it was right around that time when we had our inspection, and there was a worry about the variances going away. So this is really good news.
And, right. And my question was there any change? And I got my answer. Thanks.
Okay. Brian, did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay. Okay, then I've got Pat, Carol, and Leslin.
I'll pass.
Okay, Carol?
Yeah, I appreciate you giving the report, Peter, and I do believe that one of the reasons we float ideas here and let people know and give reports is so that we can get reaction, gather some preliminary reaction. I think that the vehemence of the reaction is an indication that that we have to tread carefully here. And personally, I would want to think really carefully about making decisions about public safety in particular based on who can afford to pay for it. Rather than looking at where is there the greatest need for a particular type of security for public safety kind of purpose. Pine Tree Road, I think, was a bad example because on its own it can probably stand up among the worst of the areas of the county that need some greater enforcement. But if there are areas that are worse in enforcement and in need for traffic control, then we really ought to be seriously looking at implementing that kind of control. So I would just want to make sure that we look real carefully and that we consider the impact not just from this is maybe an issue that transcends a particular committee and should pull in input from other parts of the community as you proceed. And I don't think we have to outline how to do that here. Just the fact that you've got the reaction is appropriate for us to give the reaction and say, yes, tread carefully on this one. So, thank you.
Leslin, for sharing it. Leslin, then I'm putting myself in and then Peter.
So, Jim pretty much pulled the words out of my mouth of where I was in terms of this because I don't feel like this is something that we've had a chance to fully vet at our committee level prior to hitting this floor. As this is a direction that we do want to move in, and let's go ahead and pursue this. I will caution people to please not open Pandora's box before we are ready to deal with what comes out of it. Please let's not do that. It is not ready for prime time. I have not been engaged as a member of the committee in a full discussion around this. If this is something we want to do, who else needs to be at the table as we talk about it? So I don't want anybody out there feeling that this is what we're doing right now and having to answer a ton of questions around it. So please, let's just let it rest.
Well, I want to jump in here. I believe in my charge at the beginning of the year to committees, I asked each committee to consider consolidated services or shared services with towns and other entities as appropriate. And I think based on that, Brian and I talked about this, and I've got some.
Thank you.
And so this is not out of nowhere. Peter, didn't you also at yesterday's public safety meeting make clear that you've had discussions with the union, and they are fully aware of? I mean, before you came to the committee.
Whoa! No,
see,
I did not.
See, this is what I mean.
I did not say that.
This is what I mean.
Okay, I thought you said that the union was...
I said that the leadership of the union had been informed and okay. that the original reaction was positive. That's what Ken told me, okay? It was okay. Not the union as a union, it was the leadership of the union.
Okay, so those are the channels that make sense. So Ken is talking to the union leadership, and I think everybody can calm down. This is not a proposal, but it certainly is important for people to talk about these things. So I've got back to Peter and Leslin. If you have something else to say, Peter?
Yeah, I just wanted to speak in general that there's a very interesting line that you never quite know which side of it is the right one, namely the line about openness and the line about non-openness.
Right.
And it's clear that there's a time when it's really wrong not to have discussed with this group of the 15 of us what it is we're doing. On the other hand, if you do it too early before you have any particular idea as to what you're doing, then it's not helpful, okay? There are more objections before even you have a proposal. Now, we do not have a proposal, but we've been talking about it long enough and carrying it. Once we start carrying it to talk to the union about it, then I think that the people around this table ought to know about it. But once again, I will state that there is no proposal. There's an idea. And the idea comes from two separate models in two counties, which I am convinced is extremely successful after talking to them. It's really good. And whether or not that particular model will go in this county, I don't know. But they have done so well, it seems to me it would be a mistake at this point not to try to do something. Because the end result is that we have better police protection throughout the county.
Very well said. Leslin, then Brian.
Martha, I'm going to use Frank's words here. With all due respect, regardless of your charge to the committee, we have a committee process. And these things come through a committee process. My expectation is that we will have a full committee discussion. You've had a meeting and a discussion. Brian has had a meeting and a discussion. I've had a meeting and a discussion. We have not had a committee process to talk about this, and that's what I'm referring to. And coming up with something that we want to say, hey, let's look into this. That's what I'm talking about. So regardless of who's met with who individually and where, hasn't been a committee process, and we should not be doing this at this point.
You mean the committee hasn't? The committee has discussed it. They discussed it yesterday.
Committee did not discuss this yesterday.
Well, it was reported, and
Peter reported on discussions he had.
People had the opportunity to discuss it.
With where, Martha? Peter reported on discussions he had with the two county. I'm now hearing that this was actually Peter and Brian that visited. I didn't know that. Okay, so no, we didn't have a discussion. We've talked about, you know, here's an area that we'll look at. We heard about it last year's or 2 years ago budget process. Okay? But there is a process that we use. So the idea, Peter's been moving forward, all commendation. I'm not knocking you, Peter, by any means, and just feeling things out. But then we bring things to committee and we talk about it as a whole and we go through it. And then we decide where we want to go next. And all the questions that are coming up now about who can pay and who can't pay and whether people can't, all of those things really sort of get work through. That's all I'm saying.
Are you suggesting that the committee should have voted to sort of authorize Peter to go
I'm saying the committee should really have had a discussion about this, and the committee as a whole did not.
All right.
Period.
I want to say I think that chairs have the authority to make inquiries about subjects that are within their bailiwick. That's a gentleman.
I have not said anything wrong with that. I just commended Peter in making those inquiries.
Okay. Brian, then Nathan.
Yeah. There's no problem at all, especially with a topic such as this, of letting everyone know the conceptual type things that are out there, you know, whatever sort of discussion we've had internally or haven't had internally. We need to refrain from any cross-party discussions that may or may not have taken place, especially not knowing, what the parties of those conversations, what sort of context that took place. So if we could just limit these sorts of discussions to the concepts of what we're looking into. In moving forward, we obviously, if we were to, as a committee, endorse this concept, you've got to include all of representative of all of local law enforcement and the public, which, you know, as time goes on, this sort of thing, if it were ever to come to fruition, would be a very, very lengthy process. And Peter has rightfully said that, yes, he and I did have made site visits to where this sort of concept is employed and does work well. That's not to say that it would work well here in Tompkins County. But, yes, we have had initial discussions and have actually looked over some other consulting studies from other counties where they decided it wasn't going to work for them. So it is in the initial stage. Please, hopefully, if anybody's listening, don't jump to any sorts of conclusions because it's certainly nowhere near ready. But the discussion of the concept is there.
Thank you, Brian. Nathan and Carol.
I'm only saying this because I'm not on the Public Safety Committee, but I just want to say that I've been spending a lot of time in Yates and Chautauqua counties, and this has been a very successful and popular program amongst municipal leaders and the Sheriff's Office. And so I think it's good that we're starting that discussion. And Peter, I was wondering if you had any plans to invite Sheriff Garassi of Chautauqua County to Tompkins County to present and answer any questions that folks have.
I think probably at some time that would be a good idea. Certainly not now. I mean, it's a little baby.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I talked to him for about a half an hour about this, and it was just, I mean, it got me very excited, and he answered a lot of my questions. I think he's just a great resource to bring in.
He's dynamite.
Yeah.
All
right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Carol?
Yeah, I just want to suggest that we try to be clearer discuss things and as we float ideas, exactly what stage the item is at that we're floating. It's still not clear to me exactly what the committee has or has not done. Floating a concept is very different. It's something that would be this big a change from how we have done business than going through like a process where it's clear. We float a concept, we discuss it, we float it both in the committee and outside of the committee. We're at this stage, then we get reaction. Before it's a done deal and an idea that's with a written proposal coming to us that can only be tweaked, I hope it comes back to us. But I just do encourage us to be clear, not only on this, but on everything we do, exactly what stage and whether something's gone through an official process rather than just private conversations and visits.
There's a long way to go on this. Everybody take it easy. It's okay. Peter?
Yeah, Carol, I think I try to explain where it is. It's an idea.
Your idea versus the committee idea. I mean, that's a real difference.
Well, of course it's a difference, but the committee hasn't voted. It's been presented to the committee. It's hard to vote on an idea. It's an idea
presented
that's being...
Presented to or discussed.
What?
Presented to or presented as an item for discussion.
Like any committee, Carol, when the chair gives a report, people can put up their hands and ask questions. I don't know what that means by a discussion. Look, at any time, I would hope that we'll be discussing this for years. I don't expect this to happen like that. Union negotiations don't go really fast, and that's a crucial part of it. The sheriff is looking into it, and the committee has, at least I've looked into it as far as I intend to look into it, and we're going to see what happens, how the various parties respond to it.
I think we can really relax about this, and let's try not to repeat ourselves. I got Mike and then Jim.
I simply had a point of order. Where are we going with this? This is supposed to be the report of the chair of the Public Safety Committee, and I think we've really exhausted this part of it, and I think we ought to go on to something else.
I would agree with that, Jim.
Oh, I was going to call the question, but I realize there was no question.
Okay, then. Is that all set, Peter?
Yeah, thank you.
Then I'm going to call recess. So let us, and poor Ed back there is waiting, and it looks like he's got work to do, but when we come back, if Gio can pick up the resolution I, the request for county RFP on county properties so that Ed can have something left of his evening. So 10 minutes, please. Come back at 25 of. We're in recess. Thank you.